Hey everyone, welcome to a brand new podcast. Meskel and the Coach, Greg Meskel here with you. Adam Krikorian is the coach. It's a sports podcast. We're of course talking water polo right in the heart of March Madness right now and women's water polo season. Coach Krikorian, welcome aboard. Thanks for taking on something else to your already busy workload, a podcast.
My pleasure, Greg. It's always a lot of fun to just talk sports, talk a little bit of water polo, talk, and of course, talk to the my esteemed colleague, Greg Meskel. So, my pleasure.
We're going to start off first with some heavy self-promotion. You and I will be calling Cal and UCLA women's water polo this Saturday on the Pac-12 Network. That's a 2:30 p.m. Eastern start, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. I know that there have been matchups for these teams earlier in the year, the Barbara Calvis invite, non-conference tournament. So it's not as if this is the first game where two of the top four are getting together, but it is now conference play, and you know, of course, how pivotal those are. I think we're in for a relatively exciting match on Saturday in Westwood.
There's no question. I mean, there's a lot of storylines here between those two teams. They had a great match in the third place game of the Barbara Calvis Invitational, and Cal was up most of the game. UCLA, I believe, won by a goal just at the very end. And Cal with a brand new head coach, Coralie Simmons, who I know very well personally, who I coached and worked with, and who does a phenomenal job and is trying to resurrect that program, get it back on track, and get it up towards competing for a national championship. And she's a Bruin herself. She spent some time in Westwood. This will be her first trip back to Westwood, and to coach against one of her good friends and an old colleague too, and Brandon Brooks. And besides that, I mean, these two teams are Stanford and SC early in the season still, but you know, they've proven that they were the best two teams, I think, clearly at that tournament down in Irvine, and you know, Cal and UCLA fighting to prove that they're right there, and a lot of talent. I mean, a ton of talent. There'll be four Olympians in the pool, six, I guess, if you include the two head coaches. So really looking forward to doing that game up in Westwood.
Yeah, it's funny. I talked with Coach Brooks and Coach Simmons this week and joked that I'm going to have to quickly pick up some sort of certificate degree from UCLA just so I can get in the door between those two, you being a UCLA alum. You know, a lot of Bruin going on here, feeling very much like an outsider. My only connection to UCLA being the occasional T-shirt and going to a basketball game. So I'm going to try and overcome that. But as we talk about the college season and this Cal-UCLA game, you're right. You talk about the Olympians, and on that Cal team, three players that took part in the 2016 Olympics. We'll see two of them this weekend, Dora Antal and Anna Ilosh from Hungary. And then for UCLA, two of your players from Rio, Maddie Musselman and Rachel Fatal, and then some players that trained with the team. They didn't end up making the Olympic team, but Cody Hill and Elise Williams. So no shortage of talent, and you have that one game where they matched up and it was a one-goal game, and you know, I know that you can't really read too much into that, and also there's the idea that they'll potentially meet again, MPSF, NCAA tournament. So, you know, you get this question a lot. Do you think everyone kind of puts all their cards on the table, so to speak, here? Does anyone try and kind of hold anything back thinking that they might see each other again? How do you play one of these games?
Well, I think you'll see everything on the table this weekend. I mean, it's to be quite frank, too, I mean, these teams are still, it's got to be in their mind that they're still competing to make the tournament. You know, there's nothing guaranteed, and they're in good position. Cal with a win over Arizona State, which seems to be kind of in that fifth position. The top four teams typically will go to NC2A. So, you know, a big win by Cal over a top three opponent would put them in an even better position. And UCLA the same. You know, these teams, you know, especially UCLA, doesn't have very hasn't had very many tough games and close games. They played Stanford. No, excuse me. They played USC, and then they played Cal. And really, that's it. And every other game has been a blowout, really. And these opportunities are so unique, and you're trying to prepare your team to perform in conference tournament play and NCAA tournament play. You need these close games and these tough games, and you need to prepare like you would a championship type game. And so I suspect that both teams are going to get after it. And again, Coach Simmons is coming in and trying to show what the Cal program is about now. And you talk about someone who coaches with a lot of energy and enthusiasm. There's no one quite like Coralie Simmons on the side of the deck. She's even been known to occasionally, as I gave her a hard time last time, reverse her cap to the backwards style baseball cap in order to get a little bit more focused. I don't even know if she knows what she's doing, but I think it'll be a real fun environment, and I suspect it'll be a very close game.
I like that. That's Corley channeling like an angry 1950s baseball manager arguing with the umpire, turning the baseball cap backwards. You talked about that game and the top four, so to speak, and that's what the rankings indicate, with USC at number one, and then Stanford, then UCLA, and Cal. On the Bruins side of things, Matty Musselman, freshman on that team, coming off the Olympic Games and has not missed a beat. Four times she's been named Conference Newcomer of the Week, and this is what's considered the best conference in women's water polo. Leads the team in scoring. Does it surprise you, kind of her adaptation to, or assimilation, whatever you want to say, to the college game? It seems like she has just kind of kept it rolling and continues to get better as she plays.
No, I'm not surprised one bit. I mean, she came on to our team as a 15-year-old kid, and the first thing that caught me, that really caught my attention, was just her courage and her aggressiveness. I mean, she's someone, you just put her into the mix, and it doesn't matter how old she is, or in this case, obviously how young she is or inexperienced from a collegiate standpoint. She's going to go out there, and she's gonna try to show what she can do. And I think she's got a tremendous amount of confidence as well, coming off of the Olympics, and not just the Olympics, but how she performed in the last 6 months. I mean, she not only made our team, but she was a huge component to our team. And I think that allowed her to feel confident going into this year. And she can just do so many things. I mean, she's such a fun player to watch because of her ability to get out of the water, her athleticism, her length. She can score on the counterattack. She can score in the half court. She can score in she can set up scores. She's one of the best defensive players, and I think leads the Bruins in steals this year. So she's phenomenal, and you put her around a great group of talented players, like a Cody Hill, Rachel Fatale, Elise Williams, new Australian Bronte Halligan. I mean, that team is potent with a ton of weapons.
Such a cool feature on Matty Musselman. I don't know if you saw this, Bruin Films putting together kind of just a 5 or 6 minute little profile on her and her water polo career, and it was just cool. Cool visuals and music and kind of thoughts from her, and really kind of just a first person narrative about her water polo journey and how she got into it and why she keeps playing. So that's posted on the Facebook page of UCLA Water Polo, among other places on social media. Going crosstown, USC Water Polo, they are in Hawaii tonight, where they can break the all-time record for consecutive wins. They're going to have a chance to do that against Indiana. So, of course, on paper, they are favored to do that. They have a 46-game win streak coming into the game tonight. They just
I
continue
think
to. Go ahead.
that I think that's our record. I think that
I figured it might be a Bruin record.
I think it is. I'm not sure from when, but someone had told me this a week or so ago that they were going to break our team's record. So I'm sure that they will tonight. I'd be surprised if no offense to Hawaii, but I'd be surprised if Hawaii pulls the upset. And
Well, actually, tonight is against Indiana,
oh, tonight is against Indiana.
but it's
Excuse
in
me.
Hawaii, and then tomorrow, I think they would establish the record, I believe. Let me look back here at my notes here. Yeah, so they come in with a 46-game win streak, which I think is the same streak you're talking about, right? From the old UCLA Bruins, and then they win tonight against Indiana. That's 47.
Got it. Got it. Well, I think that's a safe bet. So an early congratulations to the USC Trojans for beating the record. But as we all know, and I'm sure Coach Vavik will be the first person to remind them, UCLA men's team had a similar thing going
They
on this
did.
past year, right? Where they broke the all-time longest winning streak by, I think, an early 80s Stanford Cardinal team. And I'm sure that they would trade that in for a championship, and they came up a little bit short this year. So, you know, those records are great for the media and great for us to talk about and things. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's what's most meaningful, obviously, is going to be that team getting and trying to repeat as national champions.
Yeah, and while Coach says this, he is actually putting on his Indiana Hoosier pinstripe pants and red warm-up jacket to pull for the Hoosiers tonight in the upset, just to keep that record. It's like the Miami Dolphins, you know,
Right.
when they celebrate when no one has broken their streak. Other college water polo, a game that we'll see next week. Speaking of USC, they're going to host Princeton. And their goalkeeper, Ashley Johnson, Tigers are out on the West Coast this week, and someone that you're obviously familiar with, again, from the Olympic team, and is just kind of going around vacuuming up all these different accolades. So she of course, earned, you know, top goalie honors at the Olympics, and then Women's Sports Foundation Sportswoman of the Year Award, and now a finalist for the Sullivan Award, the best amateur athlete in the country. You know, she just continues to see her star rise, and it's been, I think, for me, an important thing for the sport of water polo on a number of levels. One, it kind of helps raise the profile of the game. Two, what she has done from a diversity standpoint, and this has been talked about a lot, but it can be talked about a lot more. She brings diversity in a number of ways. Of course, there's the color of her skin, right? No African American woman has made an Olympic women's water polo team before. For Team USA, and then of course won a gold medal, so she checks that off the list. But then also coming from Miami, Florida, going to Princeton, she's done so many things that I think many people thought if you did those, you wouldn't get to achieve your goals when it comes to Olympic water polo. Not that there was ever a rule about that, right? I mean, you as a coach were never saying, well, you've got to be from this county or that state, but I think there was a feeling out there, and she's kind of turned all of that on its head.
Yeah, and I think she's a great living proof that, you know, if you're talented enough and you work hard enough, you can achieve those goals, and you can, you know, for us, you can make the highest level, and you can be in an Olympic team and have some success. So I couldn't be more happy from her. You know, she's one of the rare individuals that we have in our sport, as many people have told her now, but a few have been saying this for a long time, she's someone in our sport who can make a larger impact, who can really reach out to not just the water polo community, but to those in other athletic communities and fans in general, to bring some more attention to our sport and for everyone involved in the sport of water polo, and even worldwide, not just USA water polo. We should all be thankful that such an incredible and gifted athlete has decided to pick our sport, to choose
to play water polo and to be a part of our United States Olympic team. And Ashley's done a ton for our sport, and I think we'll continue to do a ton moving forward. And it's just been incredible to watch. I mean, I've never seen situations when we've traveled, people just in awe. And I'm not talking about, you know, 15, 16, 17-year-old girls. I'm talking grown men who are waiting in line. Old grown men who are waiting in line to get an autograph from her. You know, some of it's, you know, maybe some of it is the colorversity, and I'm not too sure. Certainly a lot of it is her athletic ability, and some of it is just her personality, her smile. And, you know, I'm looking forward to her continuing to really make a larger impact on this sport. It's been pretty incredible to see.
I think a lot of people ask, what is it that makes her special, you know, as far as a player and an athlete? You've been around some of the best goalies to do it, you know, whether you coach them or coached against them or played and so on. From that standpoint, and her athletic ability, you know, and this is where I've tried to describe it, is that she can make saves that another goalie doesn't consider going after because they just don't have the athletic ability. How would you kind of describe that ability and kind of some of the things you've seen her do that might make you shake your head from just a purely athletic standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, she just, quite simply, like you said, she does things that you just don't see. And so you don't see others do. And whether it's making a diving lunging save and propelling her entire body out of the water to take it, what looks like a probable goal away, to her arm. I mean, you know, people love her shooting at the end of quarters, you know, the desperation shot, but she's got the strongest arm on our team. I mean, we one day we brought a radar gun out to practice one day, and it was really wasn't for the goalies, but of course the goalies, they always want a part in all the field player drills, and the field players are getting clocked at, and I forget the exact time, so they're, you know, it's 41, 40, I think the highest might have been 42, and then Ashley says, hey, I want to give this a shot. And you could see the look on everyone's face, like, oh no, here it goes. And Ashley, you know, winds up and I think is probably 4 or 5 miles per hour faster than anyone else. And she just makes it look effortless. You know, we all give her a hard time, and it's a little frustrating, I think, for the field players to see that God-given ability and talent come, but it's just inspiring a lot. I think we're all impressed. You know, whether it's Michael Jordan, you know, in the slam dunk contest, or just playing back in the day, or Serena Williams and the athleticism there. I mean, it's easy to spot just incredible athletes, and she's one of those that, again, can change the sport, like some of those other athletes that I just mentioned.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting to watch her next week out in LA, and then also just see kind of that progression that you talked about. Where can she go? Where can she take perhaps this college team? And then where does she just go in the name of water polo? You know, is she the person that eventually will become kind of synonymous with the game from kind of a star standpoint? This past weekend, other water polo going on, you had two kind of very different events. One, the ODP Girls National Championship, which I know you were at, kind of chance to hand out some medals and take part in kind of some warm-up drills, even with some of the athletes on deck. And then there was the National League Week 2, which is heading towards that culmination, April 1st and 2nd, the championship, in Irvine, California, and just kind of two cool events here that kind of signifies that we're really in the thick of it here. You get that little bit of a lull coming off, you know, kind of the holidays where things slow down a bit, and now you get into March, and between the college games and everything else, it seems like now it's full steam ahead all the way through the fall.
Yeah, it certainly is, and there's some great events here. I mean, I had my 10-year-old son. I was out of town at the ODB Championship, so my 10-year-old son went to water polo tournament down in Irvine, and I had no idea. I hadn't even put two and two together that the club youth water polo tournament was at the same location as
Oh, yeah,
national.
okay. Oh, so he was playing in the same pool as those guys? Oh, great, great.
And he thought it was the coolest thing to be able to play and kind of look over, and literally, I think on the other side of the lane line was those guys playing. And then in between games, being able to watch some water polo. Now, my wife did comment that she thought that my wife doesn't watch water polo at all. She would kill me if she even knew I said this, but I think she did say that she thought the boys could be in better shape, and she wasn't referring to my son's 10 and under team. I think she
Gotcha.
was referring to the National League and some of the guys. But I had to explain to her that, some of these guys, it's the Olympic Club and Los Angeles Athletic Club and New York Athletic, and some of these guys are not. They don't do this for a living. They're not trying to necessarily make the Olympics. They're I don't want to say washed up, but they're certainly on the maybe the downward trend of their ability. So, but a really neat environment for him to my son to be a part of.
Yeah, you mentioned the Olympic Club. They are 6-0 in first place now, and really kind of served notice this past weekend. But you're right; these are guys that have jobs, so sometimes this is like a weekend commitment, or they'll train a few nights a week if they can get together with a club. But knowing, and that's the thing about water polo that I think is a bit different than some other sports, is to play it and play it well at a really high level, the training commitment is just different. Not that other sports don't require you to do it, and I think anything you do more, you're going to get better at. But it's a bit more difficult. You could speak to this, having played the game, to stay at that elite level physically.
Yeah, it is. It's hard to explain to people. I mean, they're just every time I explain to those who don't know or aren't familiar with our sport, and even those that are somewhat familiar with our sport, explain to them our training schedule. I mean, they're just blown away. But the reality is that that's what you have to do in order to play at that elite level. The pool, the water is a substance that we're not necessarily used to, and the game itself requires such a combination of endurance, but then speed and power and strength that it requires that much. And it's a blessing and it's a curse in some ways. I think the blessing is, in my mind, is that it teaches hard work and discipline and mental toughness that I think is going to be so important later on in life. And in some ways, the curse is it just takes time. It takes a ton of time, and it's hard to find people that are willing to and that are committed to putting in that time to reach the highest level. But it's, as I will always argue, it's in my mind the hardest, most difficult sport in the world to play, and I think that's part of the appreciation that people have for it is knowing that and the work that's involved and what it takes to make it at that level.
So the moral of the story is, Mr. Krikorian, take it easy here. These guys, it's tough,
Exactly. Yeah, I was defending the guys,
No,
I was like,
yeah.
God, playing out there. I mean, I'm she's a tough cookie, man. No, she holds us all to a high standard here in the Krikorian household.
That's funny. March, bringing lots of water polo, but also March Madness today as we're recording this. Not the first day; they did have the first four games on Tuesday and Wednesday, but really that first day of the full slate of games.
That doesn't
Chris,
count, Greg. Those playing games don't count. Let's be honest.
though, I mean, Yes, it is not part of it in a sense, even because you can still fill out your bracket this morning if you're doing one of those online bracket things, and it will count. So that shows you how much is kind of put into those first four games. I do know there's a financial windfall for the schools that are able to win those games, but you're right. I think everyone, today is the day everyone really gears up for. This is, for many, myself included, a Christmas-like day where you get to watch multiple games. It seems that just wall-to-wall coverage, especially on the West Coast, it's like you wake up like 9, 10 a.m. and the ball tips and you're off and running. I put these 2 days really up against any day of sports in the calendar year. I just don't see another, you know, unless maybe your favorite team was in the Super Bowl, something like that. But for me, this is as good as it gets.
Well, it's part of the reason why it's good. I mean, everyone always talks about the Cinderella story, right? The team that kind of comes from nowhere and wins the games. The great thing about it is it's all day long, right? So like you said, I mean, 9-10, I think, was the first game this morning. And I think the last game probably starts at 7 p.m. or something like that. So, you know, you can literally spend all day. And for me, I have visions of being at UCLA and either being a freshman in my dorm or being in apartments. And, you know, I hope my mom and dad don't hear this, but skipping a class or two just to sit at home and to watch, or maybe procrastinating studying for finals by watching four NCAA college basketball games in a row. So it was literally spending 8 hours on the couch, but just enjoying it all and going nuts and seeing the upsets and the close calls. And in so many ways, it's just exciting to see people get, and people who don't, you know, the underdog who just doesn't have a chance, you think. Get excited and believe that they actually can, and it's amazing what can happen when people believe that they can do something. And to see them gain a little bit of momentum in some of these games is fascinating to watch from a mental aspect more than anything, probably.
Yeah, and I think like because of this tournament, you have in other sports, I think of like the women's water polo tournament, which is a 1-8 seed. You always give yourself like 30 seconds of imagination time, that the idea like the 8 could upset the 1 or the 7 over the 2 doesn't generally happen. But it's because of this tournament where you've seen, outside of a 16 beating a 1, you've seen all those things happen. You've seen the team that no one thought could do anything, not just win one game, but win a couple of games and keep it rolling. And I think everyone likes to pull for the underdog, like you were talking about, and that's kind of the fun of it. My kind of memory when this time of year comes around is going to the NCAA tournament for the first time, being an undergrad and doing student radio at Monmouth right when I went to college. And you talk about going up against someone where you don't think you're supposed to win the game, and this is back in 2001, so many years ago, and Monmouth takes on Duke in the first round. This is the team that would go on to win the national championship, that is loaded with names, you know. Jason Williams, Shane Battier, Carlos Boozer, Mike Dunleavy. Perhaps one of the more stacked Duke teams that has come down the pike in the last 25 years. And just to be at that experience and that level, it was in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is not far from Duke's campus. And the day before the game, every team gets like an hour shoot around. UCLA was there, in fact, with your boy Dan Gadzirich. And they played Hofstra, I believe, in that first round. But just to kind of be there to shoot around, and the shoot around had thousands of people there just for Duke, just to watch them do layups, essentially, and take free throw jumpers. And then, our job kind of covering the game, you know, doing interviews and getting the chance to go, you know, in the locker room among the scrum and try and, you know, get a quote from a Jay Williams, who at that time was as big as it got in college hoops. You know, he's probably the biggest name in the game that year. I think he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated preseason profile. You know, Monmouth loses by I want to say it was like 95-52, so the game was, you know, was over early. But those moments that, you know, the thought that, hey, maybe you could pull it out, kind of the atmosphere, the excitement, the buzz, I think you get at the Olympics too, right? That like kind of just natural crowd vibe, buzz, you know, playoffs, a big fight, you know, boxing, maybe UFC. You can't replicate those things. It has to come in the moment, in the venue, in the circumstance, and that's what days like today bring.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Just the nervousness and anxiousness. I love to watch and just see how people handle the moment. You know, for a lot of these teams, like you mentioned, that they've never been. I mean, for some of them, they've never been on national TV before, and they feel like this is their chance and their opportunity, not just as a team, but maybe individually, and just seeing how they handle the nerves and the anxiousness and the excitement is really intriguing to me and watching it. And on that note, I mean, who do you have? I got to ask you, Greg, who do you have winning it all? You're probably one of those guys who fills out 8 different brackets and you can pick the winner. You pick 8 different winners, and if you win one, you say you've nailed it, right? You're that guy.
I'm not, but thank you.
Thank you.
I will do usually 2-3 tops, and this year I have 2 in, and the one that I have pulled up right now, you're actually going to be pleasantly surprised. I have the UCLA Bruins taking the whole thing.
No way.
And now maybe I've set that on a bit of a limb here, a ledge, if you will.
Has gotten to you.
I had a very intense voicemail from Lonzo Ball's dad telling me what to do. No, I'm kidding. I think so much of this, I'll preface this by saying that as much as I enjoy college basketball, I have almost never done well filling out a bracket. The things that I think are upsets, they're not, you know, and vice versa. It's always a mess. But what I have learned over watching it for so many years is that it's just about who can get rolling for a handful of games. And in watching UCLA a bit this year, they strike me as a team like if they can get in a groove, it doesn't really matter who's in their way. And I know that they are just in this horrific quadrant with North Carolina and Kentucky. It's like they can't catch a break. And things shake a bit different, but long story short, going a wacky Final Four here because I just feel like I gotta mix it up to try and separate myself. Florida, Louisville, Gonzaga, UCLA.
Wow.
UCLA over Gonzaga in the final. Odds of it happening, microscopic, but given I don't know what I'm talking about anyway over previous history, I had to roll the dice a little bit.
Now I understand why you've always done so poorly in these brackets. So
yes, exactly. Yeah,
it all makes sense.
Totally.
I mean, I went a little boring, I guess. I agree with you. UCLA. I'm obviously a UCLA fan, a huge basketball fan, and I mean, when they get going, I do believe Lonzo Ball is the best player in the country. He's one of the best players I've seen coming through in a long time, and but. I get nervous about their ability to defend, and especially big, quick guards. So I had them actually losing. I hate to say this, but I had them losing in the Elite Eight to North Carolina. And I think my 4 were Carolina, Arizona, Kansas, and Duke. So a lot of the big players, nothing too exciting. And you know, I ended up picking Kansas, and part of the reason was I just felt like no one was picking Kansas. This team has been one of the best teams in the country consistently all year, and no one seems to be talking about them. So whether that kind of made me upset, I don't know. And I went with them, and then the other part of me, I had a really hard time with Duke, Villanova, and the Elite Eight, and just going back and forth. Duke is obviously coming off a hot ACC tournament, but and I'm kind of regretting not picking Nova because I mean they're the champions, and them too. I feel like they're maybe not getting the attention or the respect that they deserve, and
you know, there's something about it. As Rudy Tomjanovich once said, you never underestimate the heart of a champion. And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they go back to back, although I didn't pick it.
Yeah.
So now I've kind of covered three different teams there, right, with my pick. I mean, I picked Kansas, but I kind of said UCLA wouldn't surprise me in Villanova. So now I'm just covering my bases.
You have hedged your bets here. I think when I look at the bracket every year, I always try and figure out, and I have no formula to do this, but who's that team that you know is going to make a mini run? You know, I feel like every year someone gets in the Sweet 16 that nobody thought was going to get there, and then every now and again you get that Elite Eight team. You know, you saw it, and once in a blue moon, right, a George Mason or a Butler goes all the way to the Final Four, although Butler, you know, started to make that kind of a routine. But, you know, what are the circumstances that teams are able to kind of start clicking, you know, and so much of it is matchups and who they match up well against. And that's really the data that I don't have or necessarily have drilled down to go and get is, you know, how does each team individually match up with each other? And that's what's really going to probably help you make smarter choices here. But, you know, that's like the magic potion here. Who can figure out who's going to be that team that comes off the radar and kind of surprises everyone?
Yeah, it's hard to predict. I mean, some of these, you know, I hear people saying, I always tend to go, maybe this is from my coaching, it's because I'm a coach, but I always tend to go with the coaches. I kind of look at the coaches and the best coaches and who I feel like are going to get their teams most prepared in crunch time. But it's such a crapshoot in all reality.
Yeah.
And one team gains a little bit of momentum and confidence, and then they just, you know, steamroll from there. It's hard to figure out.
So just to reconfirm, you have Kansas winning the whole thing, and I have UCLA, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so we will be updating as we go on this, see if our teams are still left standing as March Madness rolls along. The way we end this podcast every episode is the best thing we saw on the internet, usually something social media, or it could be... you know, if you still visit web pages, you could have come across a website that you enjoyed and found something. I will start off. I have one, and then I have a bonus one that I got to mention in case, you know, unless you get there first. But the first one, circling back to water polo, I do not tire of watching drone footage from Bondi Beach in Australia of that water polo game they had there last week, where the referee is getting launched off the side of the pool from waves. And during the introductions, the players are barely able to stand. If you're not familiar with this pool or this video, I encourage you to check it out. It's on the USA Water Polo Twitter, among many other places. But it's essentially this pool that is built up right against the ocean and is filled with salt water, and the waves routinely kind of crash into it and add more water, take some out. And depending on the, you know, the ocean, it can be very, very rough to be swimming back and forth in that pool. And they had a game there. Just super, super cool.
Yeah, I mean, what a beautiful setting. Icebergs, I believe it's called, right?
Correct, yeah.
Anytime a large wave is hitting the referee in the back and knocking him back, I think all of us coaches and players are in favor of. But yeah, beautiful, beautifully done, and what an event. That's our sport needs things like that. For me, I happened to read an article this morning, actually, on the Players Tribune, which is a website that Derek Jeter created, which I love reading the pieces, the articles in there that are written by athletes themselves. And it was a reminder to me. I read an article on CJ McCollum, the two guard for the Portland Trail Blazers, who, you know, I had totally forgotten that he, and I'm actually not even sure I knew, but he played for Lehigh.
He did.
And going back to NCAA March Madness, he talked about his first round game and going back to, again, upsets and Cinderella stories. They were a 15 seed playing the Duke Blue Devils. And
I guess when they had learned the matchup, and he spoke a little bit about how he believed that they were going to win, even though they were a 15 seed and playing Duke. And I believe a girl, I don't know if it was a girlfriend or just a friend that was a girl, had asked him to get Austin Rivers' autograph, and he was, you know, disappointed and a little peeved about that. And then he went on to score 30 points. They even had a little clip of him scoring, and you could see the talent and ability when I'm watching that game, going, no kidding, this guy, it's obvious this guy is going to be a great NBA player. But it was a cool reminder for me that Lehigh pulled off one of the biggest upsets in NCAA history. I think actually what it said was only the sixth time that a 15 seed had beaten a second seed. So I guess you could argue it's one of the six best upsets in NCAA March Madness history.
Yeah, I mean, that I remember that game well, and just love seeing those moments. You know, those are things we were talking about earlier, right? Where it's like no one thinks that's going to happen. You know, Duke is of the highest pedigree in the NCAA tournament, and they're generally always able to win. But that is why we live for this March Madness. The one bonus that I wanted to add, and maybe you've seen this, but the video, I want to say it was on CNN, of the guy doing an interview in his home, and it's like kids break into his office, and like the one daughter comes in like just proud as can be, like strutting around, and then like not long after, the son in that little like baby roller chair comes wheeling in, and then his wife like slides across the floor to try and grab them all. That was hysterical. Just like, you know, like the confidence of those kids walking in, like they just want to hang out with dad, and he's trying to do this thing, and like normally the door is locked, but this one time it wasn't. It was just very funny.
That was a great piece. Yes, I mean, that was awesome. The kids obviously don't care at all. They have no idea what's going on, and
nope.
I feel like that's happened to me on a few occasions, but thankfully never on national live TV.
Oh, good stuff. So that was the best of what we've seen on the internet or saw on the internet this week. And that is going to wrap it up for this week's episode. We'll be back with you soon. So for Adam Krikori and Greg Meskel, thanks for joining us. Best of luck on all your March Madness brackets, and we'll catch you next time on Meskel and the Coach.